Hey everyone, this is Casual Fanatic.
Film reviews without the shoes.
I'm Luca, your casual viewer.
And I'm Cayman, your fanatic. Okay, so before we get started with our movie, we've got some news to talk about.
News.
So we haven't mentioned it on our previous few podcasts, and not because we don't care, but just because there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of information that we didn't have, and things have been getting pretty crazy in Hollywood this year. Right now, the WGA and SAG-AFTRA, which are the unions for writers and actors, are both striking, and it's like kind of a huge deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I hope they're getting somewhere, because
negotiations, I don't know how often they're meeting or how those are going, but for those who are like completely out of the loop, I'll do a little bit of a run through, but like starting with the writer. So like the way that a Hollywood writer would usually make money, there's a few different ways. You can like write a script and then try and sell it to a studio just like on the whole. Or you could get you could sell an idea and then they might like hire you on to like write a script for that idea and like expand upon that. You could write a book or like some other sort of property that then can get optioned by a studio, which means they can like adapt it into a movie. And then you could either be hired to do the adaptation or they could just pay you for the material and then hire someone else to adapt it. Mm. And then you can also get hired to revise an existing screenplay that someone else wrote. Those are like there are a few other ways, but those are like the primary ways that a writer would usually make money. But part of the like the biggest problems that have been affected, and it affects the writers and the actors, and we'll get to the sort of different ways that it affects them. But the like massive success of streaming services has really kind of fucked up the way that all of this works. And then now that AI is becoming like a really popular thing, that's also causing some problems, and it's a bit of drama.
Yeah, it's a lot of dramas.
So like, for example, with like a broadcast show, like on normal television, a lot of those shows have like 22 episodes or something like that. Which means like, if you're writing for a broadcast show, you have like maybe a third to half the year that you're like writing actively for that show. Whereas shows on streaming services are usually like way more limited, like 8 to 10 episodes, which means like, even if you're getting paid the same amount per episode, which spoiler alert, they're not, but even if they were, that means that they end up getting less money because there's less work to be done. Which means that like normally a writer would have like, you have like one, maybe two jobs a year in order to have a steady income. Mm-hmm. But when you have such short seasons, that means they have to like continually find new work throughout the year. Otherwise they're going like the majority of the year without any money.
Right. Right.
And also another problem is on streaming services. There's not like a, like with broadcast television, the space between seasons is usually almost exactly a year. Like it'll be like, hey, we have this show that's going to run from September to March, and then you have like the summer off, and then it gets back to September and the show starts again. Yeah. But something like The Witcher on Netflix or Stranger Things even can go like 2 or 3 years before another season comes out.
Hmm.
And so that obviously also creates problems. And just as like an example, have you heard of The Bear?
No.
I think it's on Hulu. I haven't watched it, but I've heard really good things about it. But one of the writers on The Bear, his name is Alex O'Keefe, he tweeted that, I guess I can't say tweet anymore. We'll get to that in a second. But he said that when The Bear won an award, he was so broke that he had to rent a bow tie for the award ceremony.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow.
But yeah, on a side note, also wild. I don't know if you heard about all the nonsense with Elon Musk officially changed the name of Twitter to now be X.com. So,
yep.
And I saw the app change on my phone and I was like, this is so ugly.
Yeah, I mean.
And I know people have been complaining because he put up a giant like neon X sign on the headquarters building, and the buildings around him have been complaining about how bright it is.
That's didn't they also have to take it down because maybe it was too bright?
I think they might have. I don't know. But also, I know I heard that back in his PayPal days, he actually tried to get PayPal turned into X.com as well, and the other two people that were running it sort of like vetoed that.
Yeah.
Because they were like, by that point, PayPal was already like really brand recognizable. And they were like, no, we're not going to change the name just because you think X is cool. Like, that's stupid.
He does have like a kick with that, like SpaceX, then now X Twitter, and he named his kid X something. Like,
oh my God. Yeah, no.
He has something with the letter X.
He's kind of a crazy guy. Anyway, back to the strikes. Yeah. Another sticking point is something called a writer or a mini room. So like on a lot of shows with a normal writer's room, you'll have like, I want to say like 7 or 8 writers who will like start figuring out like scripts and plot and where stuff is going to go. And then usually the time frame that they're writing overlaps with production. So they'll like start filming the show and the writer's room is still coming up with stuff. Like they'll be figuring out like episode 5 and 6 while they're filming 1 and 2 or something like that. And that's like really helpful for writers to learn like the process of how production works and like learn the ropes on different pieces of how a show is put together outside of writing, which can be really helpful for like moving up in the industry. And if a writer wants to become like an executive or a showrunner or something like that, you have to know those skills, and having that overlap between writing and production is really helpful for that. But with a mini room, what studios will do is they'll have like 2 or 3 writers, and they'll have them write almost a whole season before production starts, so that once they get it, like it makes the writers more disposable, because then like they can just like, they don't have to pay them for as long, because they can be like, you wrote that stuff, now get out of here, and then they'll move on.
Right,
but it also sure like it cheapens
normal move they do.
Right. But it cheapens the end product, because also part of it is like, you know, sometimes stuff has to change. Like no one's perfect. And sometimes in the moment, like things have to be updated or tweaked. And like there might be a point where an actor is like doing a scene and they're like, hey, actually, this line, like, just it's not doing it for me. Can we like make it a bit different so it sounds better? Or like the way that a specific actor gives a performance, it might not sound the same coming from one person to the next. And so in those situations, that actor can like go to one of the writers and be like, hey, can you tweak this line for me? And like I feel like that's a benefit to the end product. But when all of the writers are gone, then you don't have that like flexibility.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, you've seen it a ton where it's like the famous actors, they just do it themselves, right? Because they have that leeway. Right. But I wonder what the writers have to sign in order to be like, yeah, you can edit whatever you want in this work. It's yours.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing is like, because I don't know if there's like sheets or forms that have to be filled out, but like coming up with your own lines as an actor technically counts as writing. So like
and then they should get
like
bonus
if there's
pay
a
for that, right?
Like a movie where like, especially in comedy movies, because a lot of comedy movies have like a lot of ad libs. if an actor goes in and they're just like off the cuff making up like 80% of their lines, they'll probably get a writer credit because they're right. Like, that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird shit. Cause it's been going on now for how many months? Like,
I think the writer strike started in like early spring. I don't remember exactly what month. And then the actors started striking end of June, I think.
And they're striking because of the writers, right? I mean, they're hand in hand kind of thing.
No, they have their own separate issues. Yeah. So so finishing up with the writers, the last big issue is with AI, because obviously right now, like, AI is really powerful and it can, like, people who mess around with like ChatGPT and stuff like that, sometimes it spits back stuff that like sounds decent. But also if you're like trying to write a movie or a TV show or something like that, like you can tell when something is written by AI, like it's not that good yet.
That's true. Problem but you just edit it a little bit.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing is like that takes away from the writers, though, is because especially with TV shows, because especially like imagine something like Law and Order, shows like that are very formulaic. And so a situation comes up where like you the studio uses AI to generate the plot for a show or even a full season. And then rather than having to pay a writer to write all of that stuff, they have the AI write a basic script and then they pay the writer to just revise it and make it a little better. And that's just another way for them to like, just like save a bit more money. But obviously that means the writers aren't getting paid as much. And then also just because AI is not that good right now doesn't mean it won't be in a year or two. And so if it keeps improving, we could eventually get to a point where studios don't need writers at all. And they're just like, hey, I'm going to tell the computer to write me a script and it's going to come out with this perfect thing that they can just use.
Right.
And so part of the strike is them trying to make sure that that stuff is regulated and to protect their jobs.
Yeah, but how do you even regulate something like AI? I mean, it's impossible.
I mean, they're not trying to like create laws or anything, but just like rules as far as how the studios can use AI to be like, hey,
yeah, but people break rules all the time.
You're not allowed to do this and not allowed to do that. I mean, that's the power of unions. You say you follow these rules or we don't work and then fuck you.
I guess. Yeah, true.
On the actor side, a lot of their problems, again, going back to the streaming thing, usually with a broadcast show, they can judge a show's success based off of viewership and ad revenue. And a percentage of that profit is how they pay actors. Like they'll be like, the show made this much money, you get this big of a percent, that's your cut. But with streaming shows, the current way that it's set up is the studio, they don't care about the success at all. So the actors get a percentage of the sale from the studio to the streaming service. So like if Sony like makes a movie and then sells it to Netflix, it doesn't matter if that movie ends up being a massive hit or if no one watches it. Like the actors get a percentage of however much Netflix paid for it.
Mm, I can't really put input, but I do have some actor friends and they are on strike and they're not happy about, you know, how things are being run. So I'm glad and I support them doing, you know, what's best for their careers and all the new careers down the line.
Yeah, I think currently SAG-AFTRA is looking to use something called content valuation, which uses like Google searches and social media mentions and stuff like that to estimate how much a show on streaming is worth. And the studios are rejecting that, but they haven't provided any alternative. So, but like just like as an idea for how little that like these streaming things can give actors. Have you seen Orange is the New Black on Netflix?
Yeah.
So the checks that the residual checks that the actors are getting from that are like under $30 a year. And right, like for reference, like with what?
I just said, how are they making their money then?
They're not. That's the thing. Like, for example, like at
what do you mean? They're just getting paid $30 like with, and they're calling it quits?
With like with friends? Well, because there's two portions. There's they get paid when they're acting, like for being on the set on the day. But then residuals are like, when we show people this, you also get money from that. And so like with broadcast TV, they will get a residual check for every single rerun of an episode. So like for with Friends, I mean, and Friends is kind of a weird example because it's such a popular show. But like the Friends, every time an episode of Friends pops up on TV, they're making bank. The people who the actors who worked on Friends, their residual checks are about $20 million a year.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. So it like the difference between that amount of money versus like there's another show called This Is Us that got nominated for an Emmy, and Mandy Moore, who is one of the stars on that show, got a residual check for less than a dollar.
Bro, how is that possible? What are these contracts that they're signing?
Well, that's why they're striking right now, because the contracts suck right now.
Yeah, good. Fuck them. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then also, with the AI, there's been rumors that studios are wanting to set up a system where they can, like, especially for background actors, where they can pay someone to come in for one day, scan their face, only pay them for that day, and then like have digital extras in the background so they don't have to pay for people.
All right, that's a little far. That's too much, in my opinion. Nah, brother.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. And then they're also trying to do that like with like main actors. They call them principal performers. But the idea there is that they could scan the principal performer and then they could like change their dialogue, like make them say something different or even create entirely new scenes without getting consent from those actors.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's
yeah, no, the studios are pulling some shady shit.
Yeah, they're trying to maximize profits by minimizing human input.
Right. And it's the art suffers for it, and the people whose livelihoods rely on that income suffer for it.
And that's why Cam and I have also been on strike lately.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That's why we haven't had a podcast in a minute.
Oh, that's true. Well, on top of striking, for our listeners, I also just moved, and that's been a big time suck for a couple weeks. So I've been unpacking boxes and trying to find a new job and all of that stuff. So I haven't really had time for the podcast, but I think I'm in a good place now where we can start recording more regularly again.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do also have some good news now that we have gotten all of the strike stuff out of the way.
What's that?
So recently, the on-set VFX artists at Marvel have voted, or they filed a petition to have a vote to unionize. And the vote could be as early as August 21st. But literally, like, VFX union, like, is not included in, like, union stuff right now. So the petition that they sent is for a union called IATSE, which stands for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. And that usually covers, like, production designers, camera operators, sound technicians, editors, hair and makeup artists, like, all that kind of stuff. But VFX workers have like never been represented by them. And what they're doing right now is they're petitioning for production side employees, production managers and like witness camera operators, which is like a normal camera operator, but like for a digital camera that they would use for visual effects. And the goal is that by focusing on a smaller group, they will get recognition from the union, and then that will help to set an example to allow post-production employees to also be unionized. Because I think we've talked about this previously, but like that is the biggest problem, especially with Marvel right now, is they largely overwork and underpay their post-production VFX artists. One artist from Marvel told Vulture that they worked on a movie for 6 months and had overtime every single day. They said they were working 7 days a week and averaging like over 64 hours a week.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. They just need to hire more people.
Yeah. So hopefully, well, it's also because they just don't give them time. Like they'll, and I think the last time this like popped up in the news is when the She-Hulk show came out, but they were talking about there would be scenes where it would be like literally last minute, like a couple of days before the episode is supposed to come out, and they'll be like, hey, actually, we need to change this scene. And so the VFX artists have to like go back and like re-render all of this stuff, which takes a lot of time. And that's why like a lot of VFX in recent Marvel stuff like turns out so shitty. Like it's not the artist's fault. It's because they don't have enough time to do a good job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just bad fucking time management skills on the production side of things. So
yeah. So hopefully being
honestly above my pay grade,
if the on-set artists can get into a union, that I think that'll be a push in the right direction, because I mean, these people are important and they need protection from these greedy ass studios.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Give the people a part of your money, bruv, and take care of your workers.
Yeah.
SMH.
Anyway, that was my rant.
No, that's good. I mean, it's a very, you know, informative rant, and I'm glad that it's ongoing currently. Not that you and I are involved in it in any way, but
yeah, no, we're not. We could make things better for the industry at all. So
yeah, all right. But other than that, what movie are we talking about today?
Today, Luca, we are going to be talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. It came out earlier this year. I don't remember exactly what month. It was directed by Peyton Reed, who directed the other two Ant-Man movies, written by Jeff Loveness and Larry Lieber, and stars, I mean, all of the Ant-Man people. If you've seen any of the other Ant-Man movies, same cast. Paul Rudd and Evangeline Lilly are, I guess, the two primary roles. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what did you think about Quantumania?
I think like the overarching storyline to me was interesting, but I think the amount, because of the storyline that they chose to go with, I think the amount of CGI they used and some of the characters' CGI was just god awful in the movie. And granted, like, this is probably a direct correlation to the employees being overworked, like we just talked about, and or just like running out of time, just because there's so much to compute in this movie. I don't know. It was okay. I'd watch it once, but after that, I would never watch it again, ever. What about you? What do you think?
Also, forgot to mention Quantumania had an estimated budget of about $200 million, and they grossed about $476 million. So not too good.
I mean, yeah, not too good, but still a lot of millions. They doubled their input.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But I guess for Marvel, not that great.
I think, well, and also like we've talked about before, usually the budget that they list online is how much it costs to make the movie, but a lot of times studios will spend like double that to advertise it. So when it says 200 million, they really spent about 400 million.
Yeah. True. We've talked about this a few times.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. There are some good things about this movie, and we will talk about those. But overall, I'd say it's kind of a doo-doo. It's kind of a doo-doo.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, like I said, the storyline could have been so well made, but I guess the direction that they chose to go with just didn't work out.
Well, and it's also just odd
in my mind,
because the other two Ant-Man movies were very like separated. Like Ant-Man, the first one, and then Ant-Man and the Wasp, which was the sequel, were like their own story, and they were like, they were connected to the rest of the MCU, but they were never like a pillar of the universe. It was just like, Ant-Man's doing this like side adventure and this is so fun. And it's like, you don't really have to like think about how it affects all of the other Avengers or anything like that, because it's like, he's doing his thing over here and it doesn't have anything to do with like the fate of the universe. You know what I mean? But then for some reason they chose this movie to like set up like the big bad. Cause I don't know how much you know about this, but like Kang is supposed to be like this, not this phase, this like saga, I guess. I don't know how many phases they're going to, I think they have three phases planned before they get to the, like the climax, I guess. But Kang is pretty much like the Thanos of this part of the story. Like they're going to try and like slowly build him up over a few movies. And then eventually we're going to have like a big Avengers movie and he's supposed to be the main villain.
Right, right.
And I feel like, yes, technically we got introduced to Kang in the Loki series, but that was one episode and he was like not really in it that much. And so this movie is pretty much like the big introduction of this character. And it feels like such a strange thing. And I don't know why they chose to use Ant-Man as the movie to introduce this ginormous villain. Because that's just like,
it's this dude is like unbelievably overpowered. What's he usually about? Well,
that's the other thing, is he's like overpowered and underpowered at the same time. Again, we'll get in detail about that later, but like, well, I mean, like I was saying, the other two Ant-Man movies, like the first one was like he had to like the villain in that one was him fighting against another person with a shrinking suit. And it was just like, we can't let them get their hands on the shrinking technology. So you have to stop them. It was just like a very local conflict. And then the second one was like, hey, this like weird quantum powered bad guy is stealing our technology. You have to stop them. Like, honestly, both of the first movies were just like, we have to stop them from stealing Hank Pym's technology. And then this one is like, there's this crazy scientist who's going to take over the multiverse. And if we don't do something about it, everyone's going to die. And it's just like, it's way bigger stakes than Ant-Man has ever had.
Right. I mean, it's honestly way above his pay grade. I mean, he's just,
that's what I'm saying.
I feel like they almost captured it in a way of like, he went into this thing because like family values, family issues drove him, kind of like, what's that movie where like his daughter gets kidnapped and then he becomes like this super guy, whatever. But yeah, that's kind of how we see this movie. Ant-Man is like
Taken.
Driven by his family. Taken. Yeah. Like Taken. Exactly. I don't know, man. It's crazy. He was way above his pay grade.
Kind of wild. And also I should mention before we get too into it, Kang of course is played by Jonathan Majors. He is currently in some, let's call it legal murkiness. Back in March of this year, there were some accusations brought against him by his ex-girlfriend. He has denied all of the allegations. His lawyer, in fact, has recently come out saying that she has evidence that he was actually the one being abused by his ex-girlfriend. But I'm not going to make any conjecture on it. It's still an ongoing investigation. The trial hasn't happened yet. So we'll see what happens with that. But it's hard to say what's going to happen in the future, because if it does come out that he's like an abuser, then it's going to be very weird going forward with like, I don't know what Marvel's going to do, since they were trying to have Kang be their big villain, if they like can't use him as an actor anymore.
I mean, can't they just replace the actor with someone that, I don't know, they've done that a few times. Like,
yeah, they definitely could just recast him.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens. I don't want to make any judgments before we have all the facts.
Right. You're proven innocent until proven guilty.
Right. All right. So let us step into the boxing ring.
Oh, boy.
Do you have your notes from last time to see who goes first?
Yeah, I go first here.
If this is your first episode listening to us, What we're doing now is there is a website called Letterboxd that will have a short summary of the movie. Luke and I are going to try and guess what that summary is, and then we will see who gets closest. Just a fun little game. We don't really have like a prize or anything for it, but just something we like to do.
Just bragging rights. All right. Well, let's see. After having survived the quantum realm, Ant-Man finds out that his family has been dabbling in mapping out the quantum realm with ants. After having tried to turn off the device, they were sucked into the quantum realm and are needing to escape while facing some strong resistance.
Okay.
You're up.
I'll say when Scott Lang and his family get sucked into the quantum realm, they discover a secret threat that could end all life in the universe if it escapes.
All right. I forgot about that big part. Yeah, I shouldn't want to give too much away.
This says, superhero duo Scott Lang and Hope Van Dyne, together with Hope's parents Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, find themselves exploring the quantum realm, interacting with strange new creatures, and embarking on an adventure that will push them beyond the limits of what they thought was possible.
Okay. Wow, so it didn't give anything away. It didn't even really talk about that it was an accident that they're there.
Yeah.
Did you mention anything about like the whole family?
Exploring the quantum realm. I said Scott Lang and his family.
Yeah.
I didn't like name everyone like they did.
Right. What do you think here? I
don't know.
I don't either. Just because like you gave away that the Earth could die again, right? Or the universe.
Right.
I basically didn't say shit about shit. I don't know. Because I also didn't talk about them going down there to explore something. I said they got sucked into it and are having to battle an unknown enemy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't even give that away.
No, but I did say that the ants were exploring it, but that doesn't work. Yeah, sure.
Also, this doesn't mention ants at all.
I know. That's the weird part. Like, that's the whole thing.
I don't know what a good tiebreaker for this would be.
Maybe I don't know if that wouldn't work. Honestly, I'm down to just leave it at a tie. This movie just didn't do it for me.
All right.
I mean, I'm over here like,
all right.
We can guess the amount of ants that were there in the movie, but that's insane.
Oh, there's
that's
no way.
Immense amount of ants.
I was gonna say something like. It like guess who the third person listed on IMDb is or something like that.
LOL.
Or but like I wouldn't the seventh know that. Person, like some random number. I mean, I wouldn't either. It would just be a guess.
Yeah. So what do you want to do?
We can just leave it at a tie. That's fine. Well, in that case, let's take a quick break and then we will come back.
We shall. And we're back. All right. Well, it is time to, because it is a fresh movie, we have to introduce our spoiler section.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't want the movie spoiled, don't listen.
There we go.
Perfect.
All right. Well, I think it's time that we get into the weeds of the movie. And I would like to start by just talking about even the very first scene that you see, which is the darkness and then some fucking creatures come out. Dude, the CGI on these guys is so atrocious. I don't know why they thought it was a good idea to do that.
Yeah, I think just overall, I feel like the whole quantum realm just kind of looked bad. And it wasn't even like, not all of it was like, the CG looked bad, like the design was bad. Like even if they gave the VFX artist infinite time and money, like just the way that they decided, like first of all, why is everything in the quantum realm so brown? Like they're walking around and they're like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. Isn't it magnificent? And I'm just like, it's all brown. It's all brown and tan and it's just ugly looking.
Yeah. Yeah. Until they came in there like the like second time with all like the greenery everywhere.
Like they were like walking through a desert and it was brown. And then they went through a forest and all the trees were brown. And then they went like into the city and they were at a bar and everything at the bar was brown. And I was like, this is too much.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, they definitely could have spiffed that up a bit. I mean, at one point we saw later on in the movie, like this giant city that the villain created. And I was like, damn, like we didn't see any of that, like nothing.
Yeah.
With I mean, we saw, I guess, destruction after like the war started. But it would have been nice to have seen something from that in there, because that was the probably the most interesting thing. I mean, I guess when they first came in there and she, the woman knew where she was going and she opened that one door and it was kind of cool and she went to like this bar thing. But other than that, there was like nothing really interesting.
Yeah, there was like, there was never a point where I was looking around and I was like, this is a really cool environment. Like it was just like weird, like wobbly plants. And like every once in a while there would be like a creature and you're like, oh, and like they're like, oh, that guy looks like broccoli. And it's like, oh, for like none of it was interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, that was definitely a big bummer.
Yeah, I agree. There was so much freedom available to like have. But yeah, I mean, didn't really do much.
I will say on a more positive note, despite the overall lack of quality in this movie, I feel like Paul Rudd is just so charming and like, I don't know, everything he did, I thought was kind of just like the opening scene where he's just like walking along the street and like saying hi to everyone. Like that was nice. I liked that. And like even at the end when he picks up the cake and the guy's like, I came out of retirement. He's like, you did a fabulous job. And it's like the worst.
It was the worst fucking cake ever. Yeah.
I like Paul Rudd is just like effortlessly funny.
I agree. And I like that they started the movie like that, but then they also ended it like that in the same mannerism.
Yeah, it was very nice bookend. The book that he's, because in the movie he wrote a memoir called Look Out for the Little Guy. And that book is actually being released on September 5th.
Wait, what would it be about?
It's exactly what it's about in the movie. It's like Scott Lang talking about like working with the Avengers and saving the world.
Yeah, but who would want to read that? What?
I think that would
be hilarious.
Like, it would be fun to read.
You think so?
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
I probably like, I'm not going to buy it day one, but like that feels like it would be a fun read.
It'd be cool like if they made a movie over the book.
Nah,
that'd be kind of cool.
Like, why would that be cool?
Because that would be way better than the Ant-Man same the stuff Quantum that happened
in the actual movies. Like,
well, no,
everything would happen like behind in the book was already in the movies. Yeah, I mean, nah, I guess.
It would have to be behind the scenes thing.
I would read the book.
Well, you do that and let me know how it goes.
I will.
All right, good. That's funny that they took something that was in the movie and then now it's like a thing that's actually being worked on and done.
Yeah. Another thing that is just like has always kind of bothered me about, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but PIM technology is so incredibly inconsistent. But one of the things that especially stood out was pretty early in the movie, they're having like a big family dinner. And you see Hank Pym comes out with like a tiny little homemade pizza. And then he just like throws a Pym particle at it and makes a giant pizza.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you can just like make food bigger and it's like still like you'd think if you just like increase the size of the food, it wouldn't be more food. It would just be like it like each piece would have fewer nutrients in it kind of a thing, you know?
No, because whenever he turns to a big ass human, if you kill him, there's so much more meat.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And if that's the way that it works, then I'm like, why? Like, Hank Pym could solve world hunger if he has access to, if you can make like a tiny little piece of food turn into a ginormous piece of food and feed more people, like there's no reason anyone has to go hungry anymore.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that's in their next movie. Who knows?
Also, I have to shit on people again, because you know what I'm about to say, but I freaking hate so much the nanotech suits. They bother me every time. I'm never going to get over it.
Yeah, I mean, they have a thing. They're like, yeah, so this guy gets big. How are we going to do it? Okay, so a suit, and he hits a button, and then he gets either big or small, or they can like throw these little sticky metal devices on them, and then it does the same shit, or it blows up, or whatever. Yeah, I'm
yeah, right, I mean, that's also, I think, also a problem. But I just mean, like, the whole fact of like that scene where he like goes on a date with freaking, yeah, oh shit, what's her, with Hope, and he like walks into her office, and she's wearing like a pretty open, like frilly little like blouse, and then she just like slaps her chest, and all of a sudden her like wasp, yep, suit appears, and I'm like, what the hell just happened? Like, I'm not saying we need to see a scene of them like going into the closet and putting the outfit on, but the whole thing of just like, yep, I'm just gonna like press my tits, and all of a sudden the suit appears.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's the same thing. Like, at least Iron Man puts effort into it. Like, he, like, it shows how it would like work over its body, or he has to step into the suit, or that kind of thing. It just, I don't know. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think.
Yeah, I just like, it's just, it's another,
honestly,
it's another cheap. And it probably is honestly the same sort of like studio interference, where like you can either pay a costume designer to make these suits and have it be this whole big thing, or you can like barely pay a VFX artist to make the suit, and then it's like way cheaper and saves, like, they're just taking the cheapest possible route, and it's kind of irritating.
Yeah,
because I know it could,
I mean,
be
like, yeah, like at least in the Incredibles they have a tester of these suits that goes through all like this like line of things, and you can watch it, you know, take on missiles or take on fire or whatever, and I think that's kind of cool. I mean, they're still like skin tight suits, but at least there's some lady, yeah, out there that's like the technician behind it. They don't have anything like that. We don't know where the suits came from or who made them or anything like that.
Well, Hank Pym made the original suit, and I would assume that they've just like been slowly improving them. But
it'd be nice to see that, you know, like,
yeah.
Okay. So we've done enough. Like, let me interject with some good.
Okay.
I thought it was a hilarious part of the scene where they're like captured by this, I guess you can call them, tribe of different creatures, and they couldn't understand shit. And then all of a sudden he was like forced to drink like this goop. And before he drank the goop, like, they looked extremely hostile and like wanted to kill him and whatever. But then afterwards they look like little innocent, cute little things. And they're like, hey, like, can you understand us now? Like, I thought that was hilarious. Yeah. The goop drinking, and that makes him understand everyone.
Yeah. It's very strange.
Yeah. But it worked.
So one more thing about the suits, and then we can move on.
Oh my God. Is, you're still on the suits, Cayman?
No, but it's a different thing about the suits. We know they're
terrible. Oh, okay.
This isn't a suit problem. This is a story problem that has to do with the suits.
Okay.
So the whole thing is, Cassie has invented some sort of way to communicate with the quantum realm, and then it breaks and they all get sucked down there. And up until this point, it has been said over and over again that you need a suit to protect you. Like, the whole point of having a suit, instead of just like, because, you know, they have the like the little discs that they can throw at stuff and make it get bigger or smaller. But the reason they have suits instead of just throwing a disc at themselves is because for living things, when you shrink or get bigger, it like destroys them. And there's a scene in Ant-Man 1 where the bad guy tries to use the shrinking technology on, I want to say, like, a sheep, and he like shoots, or I think he even shoots it at a human being at some point to try and shrink him. And instead of shrinking, he turns into like a pile of goop, because if you shrink without a suit, it'll just kill you. But right, then when they get sucked down into this machine, only two of them have suits, and yet everyone survives. And when they get down there, Hank Pym is like, we should be dead. And Hope goes, why aren't we? And he says, I don't know. And then that's it. That's the only explanation they ever give. It's just like, eh, fuck it.
They're like, yeah, it is what it is. They'll accept.
Yeah, our, like they just like didn't want to come up with a reason.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like,
I don't know.
It was just a little irritating that they just like completely threw all of that history out the window because they're like, well, we want everyone to be in the quantum realm, but we don't want everyone to have a suit. So we'll just say they can shrink without the suits.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot they could have done with, again, I don't know. There's just so much possibility and there was so little outcome.
Yeah. And then it's endlessly irritating how much Janet like tells everyone to shut up all the time. Like for the first half of the movie, they're like constantly being like, what's going on? What's happening? Why? Like, why are we in danger? And she's like, we don't have time to talk. We can't talk right now. I'll tell you later. And I'm just like, if you would just sit down for 5 minutes and explain this shit, it would have been way easier for everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Again, she was being a massive drama queen back on Earth and apparently hadn't talked about anything for years. And now they're in this issue and they're like, and she doesn't, even while they're in it, she's like, don't worry about it. We'll talk about it later. Just follow me. Like, okay.
Right.
My bad.
And it's just like and everyone else kind of the movie as a whole kind of does this as well, where they like, they are constantly like playing the pronoun game where every time they talk about Kang, like no one says Kang until like 2/3 of the way through the movie. Everyone's like, well, he's looking for you, or you have to watch out for him, or you have to be careful because everyone knows what he's up to and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, anyone who saw a trailer for this movie knows who Kang is. Like, it's not a secret that he's the bad guy of the movie. They advertised him as the bad guy.
Yeah, they were trying to pull Harry Potter where it's like, he who shall not be named.
Right, but it's like, it's so dumb. Like, I don't know why people can't just say, oh yeah, it's Kang.
I mean, they probably could, but in their minds, everyone knows who Kang is, so.
Yeah, but still, like, everyone knows who, like, Joe Biden is. But if I just went around being like, oh, well, you know what happens if he gets a hold of you. Like, no one talks like that.
No, yeah.
I will say Hank, for as little, I feel like he's not really important to this movie, but he is really hilarious. I love, there's a scene where he literally just straight up looks at his wife and he's like, I like ants. And just like, I feel like his character has kind of evolved over a few movies to just like, he's literally just a kook now. Like, he's full on crazy where he just like wants to play around with ants all day. And I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. And you see at the very end of this movie, too, where he's like, yeah, sorry, it took a little longer than I thought to gather up all of them. There's just so many.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does like his ants. Let's see. What did you think about that one part where they were escaping that first bar they were in and they got on the ship and the girl was like, hey, I'm going to hotwire this thing. And she like moved some goop apart and apparently it's super easy to hotwire like a really high tech machine.
The goopy chips were a little weird.
Bro, the fact that she was like, I'm going to hotwire. I feel like that had to have been like a gag between all the actors of like, you know, the action movies where it's like, now I'm going to hotwire this car. And they show like a few wires being just like fucking finessed. All of a sudden they get it.
I don't know, man. I think it's also strange that like, she was like, oh, you can fly this ship, even though he's never seen it before. And he immediately flies it perfectly.
It's like riding a bike.
I think she said like flying a bike.
Oh, like flying a bike. Yeah. And then she was like, oh, just like stick more of your arms in it. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Speaking of that bar, I think the Bill Murray cameo was not as effective as the movie wanted it to be.
What do you mean?
Felt about him.
I don't know. I think he was like a good little side piece, like a side entree.
I feel like they were trying to like capture the magic of like in Thor Ragnarok when he shows up on the trash planet and Jeff Goldblum turns out to be the guy in charge there. And it's like, oh, there's this like sort of older actor, but he's like really charming and he's super cool. And he's just like gonna like say some silly things with the main characters and blah, blah, blah. And I feel like they were trying to do that kind of with Bill Murray here, and like, oh, we're gonna have this huge introduction of this character, and then, oh, it's a famous actor that everyone knows, and he's being silly and talking about having sex with Hank Pym's wife and blah 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 blah. And
I don't know,
it wasn't that funny to me.
I didn't think the guy was funny at all. I thought he was just like a rich dick. That's how I took his character as. I didn't know he was supposed to be funny. And then he betrayed them too.
In the movie funny, but it's supposed to be like out of the movie funny, you know?
No.
Like obviously he wasn't like cracking jokes, but it's like, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Yeah. Maybe it's just cause I don't know the actor himself. So it just doesn't, I don't really care.
I also think a lot of times in many of the scenes, you can kind of feel, so in this movie and in a lot of recent, like Marvel and Star Wars and Disney stuff in general, they are using a new technology called the volume, which was, I mean, it's groundbreaking technology and I have no problems with the volume. And it's especially helpful for like when everything was locked down for COVID and like when people are trying to make movies in a post-COVID world and you don't want a bunch of people running around a set, the volume can be helpful for managing the amount of people that are there, as well as it really does help with post-production because it's basically like a giant set where all of the walls are screens. So rather than having to like build a set and then have a green screen to like further out beyond the set, you just like have on the screen what the background of the set would look like.
Yeah.
And so it helps the actors because they can like, yeah, so they can like the actors when they're on set, they can see. It helps with lighting because rather than having to like point lights at them, the screens will light them, and then it's like more accurate lighting for like what the lighting would be like in that environment. It has a lot of benefits, but I feel like sometimes it's very noticeable when a bunch of characters are in a scene and it feels like everyone is just like a little too close together, and it feels like there's like everyone's on this tiny little platform and then everything behind them just feels like it's not really there. And I don't really know how to describe, like, I like, I'm not looking for anything specific, but I feel like there are a lot of scenes where you can like, you can tell that something was filmed on the volume.
I mean, I had no idea what the volume was, so I don't think I caught it, but I definitely felt like in that bar scene, it felt tight. Like the whole thing just felt very narrow. Granted, I guess it was supposed to be kind of a hole in the wall thing, but
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely didn't come across as like this grand, cool bar where people meet and like it's the resistance and whatever.
I guess, how did you feel about Kang just like as the villain?
Bro, one of my notes was like that he's just unbelievably powerful. Like the amount of things that we saw him do and just like take out, you know, people either with like his fucking laser, or he can move people through walls and through whatever. It's wild. And then he also has this thing that controls time. And I don't know, man, I thought he was the guy that could have just snapped his fingers and gotten what he wanted. But somehow Ant-Man beat him. Not sure how that happened, but
yeah, that's crazy. And that's such a, like, another big, first of all, I will say it's a really good performance. Accusations aside, like I said, we'll see what happens with that. I think Jonathan Majors did a really good job playing Kang. I feel like in the scenes where it's just him and Janet and he's like having those heartfelt moments and she's talking about, I can't believe that I got trapped down here and I lied to my daughter because I told her I would be right back. And he's like, I can fix that for you. He's like, I can make it so that when your daughter opens the door to look for you, you will be there. And felt genuine, like he actually cared. But then he's also does a great job of being like really scary. Like in the jail scene where he's like trying to tell Scott, he's like, you need to fix this for me or I'm going to murder your daughter. And I'm going to make you watch her die over and over again. And I'm like, that's fucking terrifying. Like, sorry, go ahead.
Now I was just going to add, he had like those scary sides, but then in the movie, he was also trying to let them know like that he isn't the bad guy. He's actually the good guy out of all of his iterations in the universe that are messing things up. And that's when I got kind of confused. I was like, okay, well, you're threatening to kill these guys, but then granted, maybe he's just not got that human aspect of him because he's always been a ruler no matter where he's been.
Right.
That's what confused me. I was like, is this guy the good guy? And it even came up at the very end of the movie where
Ant-Man was like,
yeah.
Because I feel like, oh shit, like,
did I do it wrong?
In these movies, I feel like the heroes never question themselves. Like, there's never a moment where they're like, did I make the right choice? Like, everyone, like Thor, Iron Man, like all of these other heroes are so confident that they did what's best.
Is Thor confident though? I mean, we saw him all the time have like heartaches and like regret and
he's got a lot of like mental health issues and like he's lost a lot of people and he's depressed, but he's never like, when Thor like kills a bad guy, there's never a moment where he's like, nah, I shouldn't have done that, you know?
Right. True. Yeah.
But the idea that Kang is like, listen, there are an infinite amount of me and they are going to destroy everything if I don't destroy them first, kind of a thing.
Right.
And yeah, the same sort of thing. I don't know if you've watched Loki. I would recommend it. Pretty good show, honestly. But he does pop up at the end of that series as well and pretty much describes the same thing where there's like a whole scene and a lot of people didn't like it. I kind of liked it. But there's a whole scene where he explains like, at some point in history, a version of him discovered how to travel through the multiverse. And then as he started doing that, he started discovering other versions of him that were also discovering how to travel through the multiverse. And for a while, they were like all working with each other and they were like making these huge innovations. And that's why he has such powerful technology, because he worked with other versions of himself to like create this amazing technology between multiverses. And after a while, a couple of the versions of him weren't as cooperative as the others, and so they started fighting, and so it turned into this huge war where all of these Kangs were fighting each other, and it was just like entire timelines were being destroyed, and he like was afraid that eventually every timeline was going to be destroyed. And so his goal in Loki was to destroy all of the timelines except for one, because if there's only one Kang, then they can't fight each other, kind of.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy, though. I mean, even just making one version of him, that means you have to kill unknown amounts of people in these other timelines. I don't know, but this guy is unbelievably powerful. That's literally what it gets to. And I don't know how fucking Ant-Man, his little crew beat him. Well, and his whole city of defenses and et cetera.
It's so stupid, because he like talks about all of the other Kangs are afraid of him, and that's why they exiled him to the quantum realm. And so it's like, it makes it seem like he's way more powerful than the other Kangs, but then at the same time, he gets beat by like some ants.
Right. <That's> insane. It doesn't make any
like,
sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
And then they were talking about how the ants that they have like also did time travel and like learned so much, and then we don't see any of that.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I don't know. It makes me question the future, because I'm like, there's two options here. Either for somehow this Kang comes back and he's not dead, and he just like, he got sucked into a different realm and he comes back and he's more powerful and he's angry now and blah, 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 blah. That's one option. Or this Kang is dead and then we're going to fight a different Kang later. But if we fight a different Kang, then like that means we know that it's a weaker Kang if all of the other Kangs were afraid of this one.
Right.
So if the most powerful Kang is stronger now, then why should we care about any of the weaker Kangs?
Yeah, just put ants on them and you'll be good.
And also, even if it's not weaker, like if Ant-Man can kill a Kang, then like, where is the stakes if you can just like every movie put in a Kang and then that Kang dies and then in the next movie we have a different Kang? And it's like, if it's not the same Kang every time, then I feel like it's harder to care.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
That was my rant on Kang and that whole thing of how they beat him. I mean, granted, he didn't have like his little power orb time travel, but that doesn't have anything to do with his powers. Like,
yeah,
he was still just as powerful.
I also think they have that scene towards the end where Cassie gets big, and then her and her dad are like hugging, and they're like, oh my god, you're so big, I feel like I'm hugging Godzilla. And I just, like, I don't know, I feel like it's hard to, like, the scale is just so weird, first of all, because when they were doing that scene, like, all of the city stuff was, like, really far in the background, like, there wasn't really anything close to them, so it was kind of hard to like judge how big they are, because there was nothing to compare them to. But then also at the same time, it feels weird to talk about them being big when we know that they're in the quantum realm, because then it's like they're incredibly small, and then they've just got like a little bit less incredibly small.
Yeah,
like they're not really big. They're just like they're still tiny.
yeah I don't know.
So I don't know,
like, the whole idea of the quantum realm, I get, but at the same time, I don't get, like, is it like a wormhole you travel through to get to, or is it just like in that one spot, super small, that is what's happening?
Well, that's what I'm confused about as well, because there's a point where they talk about the quantum realm as being like outside of space and time. And I'm like,
right, like a location that you go to.
Does that mean that only one quantum realm exists? Or, like, does every universe have its own quantum realm?
That's my question, too. Yeah. So that's what I don't know. It was unanswered.
I also felt a little weird about when Scott is, like, running through the city and he's, like, getting mad at Kang because he's like, you lied to me. You told me you'd give me my daughter back. And he says, like, our word is our bond. And I'm like, I don't know. That felt like such an awkward line. Like, I'm like, since when is Scott, like, such a stickler for honesty? Like, I don't know what that's about.
Yeah. He was just pissed off, bro. He was just ultra mad.
Yeah. It just, like, it felt like he was mad at the wrong thing. Not like, you stole my daughter, but just like, you lied to me. And I'm like, all right. I feel like that's not that big of a deal.
He is, after all, a killer and evil and a big ass villain. Yeah. Of course he's going to lie. I agree.
One thing I did think was I liked is I feel like a lot of the reactions I've seen is we haven't talked about MODOK at all, but that was such a weird character, and having what is it, Corey Stoll, I think is his name. Yeah, Corey Stoll. I got it. I don't know, like, I'm not a VFX artist, so I can't suggest ways to improve it, but I feel like the way that they stretched his face out, it just looked
so awful.
Like,
so
fake.
Bad.
Like, it didn't look like a real person there.
Right. Dude, I don't know. It looked like a fucking, like Thomas the Train Engine kind of thing. Like, the front of the train had, like, you know, the faces. Like. Bro, I was like, what is this, man? And it, like, looked blurry, too. It was just strange.
It was very strange.
Not a fan of
But at the end, he has that scene where Cassie's like, don't be a dick. And then later he, like, comes in and attacks Kang, and he's like, I'm not a dick. And I know, I feel like that's the line that everyone remembers, but I feel like for me, the funnier line is, like, right after Cassie says, don't be a dick, he says, it's too late. Look at me. I'm such a dick. Just like the delivery of that line was a plus for me.
Yeah. I also liked when he was dying, he was like, and now I'm an Avenger. And they're like, they, like, look at each other like, yeah, you are.
Sure. Yep, totally, you're in.
I thought that was good too. But yeah, the dick lines were funny. I do think that overall, though, in the movie, there were some interesting, like, fight scenes. Like, there's that guy with, like, the head of the cannon that was, like, a gold laser beam. And then the
He's
way
a
that he died.
Cool character.
Yeah, super cool character, like, and then he died.
He wasn't cool enough for me to care about his death, though.
No, I just thought his death was really cool, too.
Yeah, it was super cool, but I feel like they tried to, like, make it kind of an emotional moment, but for me, it was just like, oh, man, that sucks.
No, yeah, same. I don't think there's any emotion in that, but, yeah, I don't know. Like, there are here and there some cool things, like the buildings that were alive and that had cannons, they could fly away, and they had kind of arms and legs.
Yeah. Also, I think, and this is honestly one of the, like, more disappointing parts about the ending, is they, like, they set it up so it looks like Scott and Hope are making this huge, like, heroic sacrifice where they trap themselves in the quantum realm in order to save everyone else. And I'm like, oh my God, that's like so cool. And it like sets up the future that they're going to be like stuck down here, but they like, they did it for a good reason. And then it gets immediately undercut because like less than a minute later they get saved and they're like, yep, we're just going back to the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. Strange occurrences. So,
wasn't a big fan of that part.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean,
I also, this is a very minor thing, but in the scene where he was doing the thing and he's like, oh, you're in a probability storm. And then all of those different versions of him kept popping up.
Oh, yeah.
And the way that MODOK was explaining it, he was like, every possible choice that you could make is occurring all at the same time. And I'm like, okay, I can follow that. But then at some point, like a version of him wearing his Baskin Robbins uniform shows up.
Yeah.
And like, it was kind of funny, but at the same time, I'm like, how does that exist? Like, there's no series of choices that he could make where he would just have that outfit and be able to change into it. Like, I don't understand.
I don't know. Maybe in one timeline he got sucked in from Baskin Robbins and he just had that outfit on.
Yeah, but it's not like different. It's not, it felt like past choices didn't matter. Like, it wasn't a different timeline thing. It was like every time a choice happened in his head, more of him popped out.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I don't know. And he was like the only guy that was not wearing like the actual suit. So,
right.
Yeah. And then they all started.
I do like that collective. He was like, they were like, what are you wearing? And he's like, this is my uniform. This is what normal people wear. What are you wearing?
Yeah. 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 He didn't even care where he was. He was just talking about the uniform. But I do like that they started working together as a collective. And he was, and the guy, the evil guys were like, how are you doing that? And he was like, we all want the same thing. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. And then they still failed. So.
Yeah, that was also, that was kind of crazy.
Let me ask you this. At the very end.
Yeah, go ahead.
At the very end, right, where Ant-Man like was in the fight with the villain, right? And the portal basically closed. Yep. How did Ant-Man and his gal, how did they know that they were going to be able to go back home, like after the portal closed? Because they were just standing there and then the portal opened behind them and then they were like, let's go home. And then they like walked
I guess they just, into the portal. They just I'm heard like, the portal and assumed what? That it was the right one.
Like, but that doesn't make any sense to me. How all of a sudden are they opening portals? I thought they had no control over that stuff. It. Well, yeah, but like I didn't know that she had control of anything like that.
Well, I guess. I mean, I don't know. She figured something out.
That's what I'm saying, though. It was like literally 2 seconds, like this big dramatic scene of like, oh my God, the portal's going to close. Like, we can't let the evil guy out. And then like it closed and they were like, oh my God. They were like, the people on Earth already were super sad because he didn't make it.
Right.
But then then they had like just open a portal like 5 minutes later.
Well, that's what I was saying a second ago. I was like, it felt like they were trying to set it up like it seemed like this giant sacrifice, but then it's not.
Yeah, it's fucking whack. Whack, I tell you.
We do see there is a mid-credit scene with the Council of Kangs, where there are three like big guy in charge Kangs. One of them, I believe, is called Rama Tut, which is a version of him, obviously from ancient Egypt. There's another one called Immortus, which is the like future-y kind of looking one. And then one called Scarlet Centurion, which is the one with the really like weird raspy voice. And they're like all talking to each other about they can't let the Avengers like get control of the multiverse. Otherwise everything that they've built will be destroyed, blah, blah, blah. And then they walk out into a stadium and there's like thousands and thousands of other Kangs.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't know what direction they're trying to go with this. If it's going to be like, we're just going to have a different Kang every time, or I don't know. I don't see where this is going. And I'm very confused about it right now.
I mean, I'm there with you. It seemed like the other Kangs were all working together, but I don't know if he said that at one point, all the Kangs were fighting each other. That means there must have been like a good Kang side and a bad Kang side, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Or all of them are just super. I don't know. And then maybe he was like the last good Kang, but now he's dead. So they have like free reign. I don't know what they're doing. I agree. All that stuff was just poorly explained, and it was thrown in there to cause confusion, but also thrown in there to cause it, to use it as a kind of an explanation of what's going on, which doesn't really work.
And I also think so that was the mid-credit scene, and then in the post-credit scene, we see what I'm assuming is just a clip from season two of Loki. I mean, like I said, the first season was pretty good, so I'm assuming the second season is going to be good. I don't know when it's supposed to come out. I think in like a month or two. I'm pretty sure it's going to come out later this year, so it shouldn't be too long. But hopefully we get more, I guess, information and clarity about Kang, because right now it's very just cloudy, and I think they need to figure something out, or if they have something figured out, they need to let the audience know, because it don't make no sense right now.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, my last note that I had was the quote unquote "did I kill everyone" moment, where he like had that remembrance, but we already talked about it. So
yeah.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how long the next movie name will be, and it'll be interesting to see how they tie, I guess, the bad guys into like the new one.
I think because, I mean, like I said, I don't know what the future holds. So for now, it seems like this movie, because Kang, like, quote unquote, dies at the end of it, it seems like this movie isn't really that important, because the villain gets defeated and all of the protagonists end up exactly where they were at the beginning. So if you are on the fence on whether you wanted to watch this movie or not, you don't need to.
No, you don't. Nothing happens in it. It's stalemate.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't even know if that the villain dies like properly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, we'll see in the future if we learn later that he didn't die, then this movie might become more important. But for right now, if we assume that he's dead, then this movie doesn't really matter.
It would mean more if he died, because then at least they did something good and or negative. If he's still alive, this whole movie was a waste of time.
It would be better in universe if he died, I guess. Well, I mean, it depends. But like I'm saying, like from a movie perspective, if he died, then that means this story is self-contained. But if he didn't die, then that means this movie is part of a larger series of movies, which then
I got you. Okay, I got you. Yeah. That makes more sense. Yeah. Well, guess we'll have to wait and find out.
Yeah, that was also all I had. So I guess we will move on to trivia now.
Let's do it.
I don't have a lot, but I'm
not surprised. I mean, there's not much to it.
This says the film's ending was actually changed quite a lot, and it was originally supposed to end with Hope and Scott being stranded in the quantum realm. But after some reshoots, the ending was rewritten where they get back to the real world after the portal being opened again by Cassie. And then Scott's final monologue about Kang, where he's like uncertain if he did the right thing, was also added in the reshoot and wasn't part of the original script at all.
Oh, wow. That made it so much better. Good reshoot then.
Yeah,
because that.
So what? One good thing and one bad thing.
Uh huh. Wait, what did you say? You said one good thing, one bad thing. I thought you were gonna keep going.
No. I was saying like that. They in the reshoots, they had one good thing and one bad thing. Them not being stranded and just randomly getting back out through the portal is the bad thing, and then the monologue about Kang was the good thing.
Okay, I agree. Yeah.
I think that's it, actually. Yeah.
I mean,
that's my only piece of trivia.
Yeah, that works. I mean, another cool piece of trivia that they probably would never tell us is like how many computers it used to make this terrible CGI.
Or how many artists had to go hungry for weeks on end.
Yeah, that.
Then let's get wrecked.
Let's do it. For anyone that likes volleyball, I highly suggest you buy your own volleyball net. I've been playing volleyball now for maybe a year, and I play all the time grass. And yesterday, actually, I got my own volleyball net that came in, and it's called a Spectrum net.
Okay.
It's by Park and Sun Sports. And if you have buddies that just like playing ball, or even don't, like yesterday, I brought it to just another group that doesn't play volleyball, and they were like, I cannot, like, they thanked me for bringing you because they were like, I can't believe like volleyball is actually this fun, especially with friends and whatnot. It's super easy to put up.
So you just like go to a random field compact. And set it up?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you can go to any grass field anywhere.
Do you not have like a lot of places around town that like have like permanent volleyball areas?
No, dude, it's super limited. If you go to the big park here that I live by, at one point, like there's probably like 300-400 nets up of people just playing volleyball. It's insane.
That's kind of crazy.
But yeah, that's my rec. Yeah, I know. Like, I wish I knew of this in Texas, because that would have been really fun to just go to like some grass field with your homies, like at a school or something, and just play volleyball. It's such a fun sport, and it gets you out there. And that's my rec.
I've got two recommendations for our audience today, because like I said, I've had some time to not recommend some things. So I've built some up, but I've watched two amazing shows recently that I would highly recommend. The first is Andor on Disney Plus, which I know is like really old news. Honestly, both of them are old news because these shows came out quite a while ago, and I just got around to watching them. But Andor is a way better show than it has any reason to be. I think it's probably the best Star Wars show. I mean, I haven't watched like Bad Batch or Rebels, or like, I haven't watched any of the animated stuff, but out of the live action Star Wars stuff, I think Andor is the best, probably because it's like, it doesn't really require any knowledge about Star Wars. So it's very easy. Like if you're not really a Star Wars person, it's a good show just on its own merits. Like really the only thing that you would have to know is just like the fact that the Empire exists. But like it's like the Empire and the Rebellion are like the only two concepts that you have to be like not even familiar with, but just like you know of them.
Yeah.
But it's like it's a really good show, and there's like intrigue and action and a compelling protagonist, which is like, I don't know, like I said, I don't think anyone expected the show to be as good as it is, but it's really damn good.
Okay, how much of it have you watched?
All of it.
Oh wow, all right, so you know everything.
And then my second recommendation, also another show that has been out for a while but I just watched, is Chernobyl, which obviously is about the meltdown at the Chernobyl reactor in Ukraine. But it is a beautiful series. I think it's like 5 or 6 episodes. It's a pretty short series, but it's the cinematography is great. The writing is great. All of the performances are great. It just like really gives you a really like, it puts you in the situation where you like, you really get to like, I don't know, like experience it more firsthand on like what these people actually went through. And like, it's very not only eye opening for people who like don't really know that much about the Chernobyl accident, but it's also just like from a storytelling perspective, like you see the amount of things that had to go wrong for a disaster of this magnitude. And it shows that like there were mechanical problems. There are problems as far as the people directly on the site. There were problems like countrywide problems from the Soviet Union, and like all of these little pieces just built up and built up, and it eventually catches up with you, and like bad shit happens that kills hundreds if not thousands of people. And it's just insane when you see something like that on the TV, and then like it starts to sink in that like this isn't just a TV show, like this actually happened.
Yeah, it was a real thing. Yeah, that's nutty. Have you finished watching all of them? Because I remember we talked when it was just the first show that you watched.
Yeah, I finished that series as well.
Damn. Well, wow. Yeah, based off of what you told me and what you've said now, definitely would be a good watch. What is it on again?
So Andor is on Disney Plus. Chernobyl is on Max.
Nice. There you are. Those are some good recs.
And so for our audience, Please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. Tell your friends and family about us. Follow us on X and Instagram at CashFanPod. And if you want to send us a message, you can do so on either of those platforms, or you can send an email to casualfanaticpodcast@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Links for all of those things will be in the description for the episode. Luca, would you like to tell them what kind of messages they can send us?
Hey, I mean, you guys can send us recommendations like what we just gave you of things that you think we would be interested in and that you'd like us to share with the listeners. You can let us know of any movies or shows or clips that you would want us to look at and maybe talk about, especially if it has to pertain to something that we talked about, such as, like, let's say the writer's strike or the actor strike. If you have a specific movie that you would want us to review, let us know. And if you have feedback or have like another cool, funny idea of something that we could add to the show, you can also let us know that through all of our social medias.
Awesome. Well, this has been Casual Fanatic. Thanks for listening.